96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is Monday, December 18th. Yep. And it's after 11 o'clock in the morning. Once again, this is C.A. Nuri and I shall be your host today. And of course, Aaron Green has joined me as we continue our discussion on our year-end review. And when you say have a discussion on our year-end review, we are continuing a discussion on topics we had before, but analyzing and seeing where do we stand now. I know Aaron was reading a list of things that we highlighted during the year and also that need some introspection. And I wanted to put this on the table also. I want to include in our year-end review bohemian culture, the way we do things, right? And being by the way we do things, the way we do politics, and should we be continue to do it that way? And also I wanted to put on the table the social aspects on the culture of the Bahamas in terms of this new culture we're embracing of this feeding network program. And I'll start there, right? Earlier you mentioned that the social services is going to be delayed. There's going to be a delay in terms of the vouchers, the food vouchers that is going to be given out during the Christmas time. And for whatever reason that caused it, the point is it's going to be a delay. And you were pontificating earlier that the number of Bahamians rely on these vouchers to get them through Christmas. I want to extend this by having a conversation on the feeding network programs that we have embraced seem to have become a part of our Bahamian culture. Right? I understand COVID happened. I understand the need to create these feeding networks in general, these food storage places. But it seems as if Bahamians are now depending on cooked food for them to survive. And despite the tourism numbers, right? Despite the successes that our government is rendering and heralding, Bahamian people seem to hurt or be hurting. And we see that, you mentioned Royal Caribbean, the cruise line that donated how many pounds
I think it's either 25,000 pounds or 50,000 pounds of turkeys.
Right, to give away to Bahamians who can't afford to buy turkey. And people said, but this is a good thing. And I want to interrogate this, Aaron, and say, this is not a good thing. Something is wrong with us because it seems as if, despite all of what is happening, the development, the increase in tourism numbers, we seem to be delving more and more into poverty. And I am concerned about it because I'm one of those people who believe you teach a man how to fish instead of giving him a fish. And now we're seeing number of men, we're seeing politicians, we've seen social entities not just giving out raw food items or care packages. They're giving us a plate of food. And I have an issue with church, social, civic groups in large numbers continuing to give out plates of food. I think that this is a major problem that needs to be addressed and arrested immediately before we become overcome with this.
Well, the interrogation has to start immediately, right? I would like to call this a question of charity versus structural reform, right? And the first question we put on the table is, the amount of money donated, committed, dedicated every year to these charitable efforts, could that money be used to implement short-term and medium-term structural changes that would give people more autonomy and allow people better personal and familial development, right? So say the whole feeding network, generally, not that specific group, yeah, but the whole national feeding network receives $2 million in, or say, let's a real number, $5 million in contributions yearly. Can that $5 million be used to start farms, one to produce eggs and chickens, one to grow regional suitable grains, right? They grow rice in Jamaica. We may not grow rice here, but we may grow a wheat, right? A grain or a type of grain we could process for bread. We could be just processing coconuts for coconut meat, for coconut flour to make bread with. Is the money being donated regularly to the feeding network, the general feeding network, more suitable? Would it be more effective in creating strategies? So you start with a farm, with farms and processing centers to produce, to process produce to put in people's homes to cook. Then a temporary living facility or a low-cost apartment rental facility with a suitable size stove, refrigerator, and storage options so people can keep food in their house better, prevent intrusion by rats and pests.
And forgive me for interjecting.
Right.
The question now is, are we hurting in the Bahamas? Either we are doing good or we are challenged. And I don't think that narrative of where we stand, where we currently stand, is being enunciated, that Bahamian people say, okay, I see where we are. Let's move forward. It seems as if we have a false reality being perpetrated and heralded.
Well, I think,
and we are not there.
I think two things can be true at the same time. I think that we could be seeing return of record numbers of tourists, a return of record amount of revenue being generated from tourism specifically in the country generally. And on the other side of the coin, the people who need the revenue, the resources most, are not getting them, right? The two things could be happening at the same time. The country could, quote unquote, be doing very well, like the economy could be doing very well, but that revenue is not being diverted to the systems and the communities and the constituents that need it most.
So who is responsible for doing this analysis?
The government.
And if the government is not doing this analysis, what should the people do?
Do it themselves. So here's what you could do. You could reach out to an organization like the Chamber of Commerce and Employers Federation and say to them, listen,
people who are saying the big companies don't need to be analyzed.
No, I don't know if that's quite what they're saying.
What are they saying?
What they're saying is the big companies cannot manage the process. That's a bigger question to discuss, right? Mm. Is that they're saying that it's too, not rigorous, but it's too heavy, it's too complicated, it's too much for those businesses. We got to talk about that, right, as another thing. But the Chamber and Employers Federation, a small organization, you go to them and say, look here, I need some technical support. I need you to link me with experts in your networks or outside your networks, just give them a referral. I'll make the introduction myself to people who can help us conduct this assessment ourselves if the government doesn't want to do it. Mm-hmm. This is why this conversation about public disclosures and the gazetting process is so important. These things should be accessible so any NGO or individual could use their own resources to take the data and make the assessments they think unnecessary. But now you telling me I can't even as a citizen do that because you refuse to make the information public and accessible.
In your opinion, should we be concerned about our economy?
Yes.
Because our government don't seem to be concerned. They seem to be touting that we are doing well, that good things is in the immediate future. But when you see the electricity bill is up 40%, when you see your food is up 27%, right?
When you see the hospital charging you for masks?
That's a different story. I'm not sure that the response by our government is adequate. And now it has the Bahamian people confused because I'm seeing the bread lines are getting longer. I've seen the dependency on these feeding networks is getting so large that we should be nationally just concerned to, hey, we seem to be slipping into poverty, national poverty.
Well, see, right? I don't know if we have any economic advocates. I don't know if we have any NGOs whose pure focus is analyzing economic policy, the efficacy, the right? Whether they're effective, whether they're efficient, whether they make sense. We don't seem to have anybody who is willing to have that conversation publicly.
Before I change subject, right, the number industry, them donating ham and turkey at the end of
abomination.
The year. See, I'm going to ask you if it's a good thing or
because
bad.
they could build a turkey farm.
They could start a whole turkey industry.
I mean,
right?
the truth is, forget turkey. They could have a chicken farm, and in the Bahamas, watch this. Here's what I would do.
Because I'm going to ask you, should we as Bahamians be grateful to them?
For what? For what? For what?
They donate ham and turkey in school bags at the end.
You mean the same people who could build apartment complexes and afford to finance them in a way that people could actually afford to rent them over the first 10 years? I mean, that's what we... What are we thanking them for? For giving away school bag?
They're not our saviors?
No. Here's what I'm saying. We could be...
This week, Aaron. They're going to be giving out TVs.
To whom?
To people who could be in at their...
See, let's talk about it. Pause. I love that example.
They could be getting on TV.
Pause. I love that
That's
example.
A good thing. They save
TVs. Because watch this. Children need things. I don't care how poor they are. Children need things. A TV is a tool if used correctly. So I don't have a problem with you giving away a TV in and of itself. But I ask this question. How many of the people that you're giving the TV to can maintain their electricity regularly? How many people, when they put money on their light bill, bring it down to zero every month? How many people live in homes that are properly wired and are properly insured? How many people could afford contents insurance? That's when you rent an apartment, so you're not responsible for the insurance on the building, but you can insure your own contents. How many of the people he's given away TVs to can afford content insurance? How many see? I get a text here, dear text, and I forget your text. The text is same as green. You go on to QC, you live Johnson Road, you ain't poor. I poor, but I'm privileged. I poor personally, but I'm privileged collectively, right? And the neighborhood I live in, there's one of the nastiest neighborhoods for BPL operation. When the power surges, it could destroy everything in my home. No matter what tools I use, mechanisms I use to protect my home. You giving away TVs in an environment where the TV could blow tomorrow in a normal surge and the company will refuse to even acknowledge that they have surges? By the way, BPL linesmen are the best. They are the best. They ain't responsible for them surges. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So here's what I would do. If I were a numbers man and I had more money than God is willing to spend on a Sunday, I would build a turkey farm in the Bahamas. And I would say to every cruise ship moving through this country, when it's Thanksgiving time, I expect you to buy every turkey I have. I'm prepared to make sure every turkey on your cruise ship, on your fleet of cruise ships, is from the Bahamas. And they're growing chicken on the other side of my farm.
So let me
farm.
Beat you. Should we be grateful? Should we... look at it as a good thing that a cruise ship could give out or we expect or demanding that we get turkeys.
No, the cruise ship should partner with the web shop guy to ensure the sustainability of the turkey of the poultry farm for the cruise ship itself and for the Bahamian people.
See, when I listen to you, it suggests that we're broken because what we celebrating, what we heralding is not a good thing.
But this is it. Because we're not broke. We're broken. We're not poor. We're not broke. Our systems are broken. And it doesn't matter how much money you pump into the broken system, you're never going to produce what you set out to produce, what you intend to produce, because it's broken. We, in the same way, are broken. We don't understand how migrants come here and do more with less. spiritually, culturally, mentally, emotionally, be traumatized.
Let's pivot, because I wanted to have that as part of my year-end review. The economy, the culture of us.
Right, but let me just throw this example in there dead quick. You see this thing called ramen noodles, right? Mm-hmm. We have this, what you call this cultural attitude.
It goes well with my
only poor people is eat. Oh, I like that. I can try it. Yeah. Only poor people is eat ramen, right? Now, what we've identified is this, is that some of the commercially produced ramen products are not as good for the body as we would like. Mm-hmm. We're concerned that poor people eating too much ramen and it's going to destroy their systems. Why are you all eating that? Mm-hmm. But you go to the Japanese restaurant and they're serving you a ramen bowl and you're prepared to pay 17 times or 45 times the cost of that one pack of ramen in the food store for it. Mm-hmm. But nobody has said to the Bahamian people how easy it is to make ramen noodles at home. Mm-hmm. Nobody has pointed out that you could make these noodles in a healthy way at home. And in fact, making your own pasta is healthier than buying store-bought pasta. So I'm just saying, we're not broke, we're broken.
I know I said it's going to pivot.
Yeah.
The Ministry of Tourism said the tourism arrivals are skyrocketing. It's up. From 2019, mm-hmm. The straw vendors are saying, man, this is the worst it's ever been. Mm-hmm. Despite the numbers quadrupled, mm-hmm. The money is not trickling down. The taxi drivers are complaining that they are not making any money. The narrative that we are doing well, is that a correct narrative?
Somebody's doing well. Right? The person who collecting the tax from the cruise ship's doing well because record numbers are up. The question is, what is the ecosystem in which the tourists move about and the money moves, right? What's the ecosystem the tourist money moves in? And why are those constituents who are concerned about their revenue generation, why are they not implementing new and different models to attract that? Like if I were a straw vendor, I'm not relying on cruise passengers walking in, discovering me out of 25, 30, 100 other straw market vendors. I got to have to build a brand. And I'm going to, if I can't develop a formal relationship with the cruise ship that I could advertise my particular business on the cruise ship, then I got to find the forums closest to the cruise ship where tourists go to find information. And I'm posting my product as broadly and as widely as I can, right? There are mechanisms of it. You could pay Google to make your search come up first in the straw, Caribbean straw craft search, right? Like become a bit more savvy, develop different models to draw the money to you.
So we pivot now. The second thing I want to discuss on our year end review is the way we do politics.
Yeah.
We have two members of parliament before the courts now. Mm-hmm. Not one, but two members of parliament before the courts facing serious allegations of crime.
Yeah.
Right? And not one considered resigning.
One didn't even think he had the need to go talk to the police. I mean, when I say that, he didn't express publicly that he saw the importance of going to speak to the police. He may have felt it and kept it to himself.
And I brought it up, right? As it tells a tale about us as Bahamians, because we as a nation have yet to demand that, hey, I understand you're going through some turmoil in your life, but the position that you hold is sacred to me. And I beg of you, relinquish, abdicate that position, that there, so it remains honorable. Mm-hmm. And we, the Bahamian people, have yet to do that. I'm not even considered that their fellow member of parliament and how they view things. That, again, it seems as if we are broken or we don't know what is expected of us, mm-hmm. as a people.
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. One of the tenets of the Westminster system is you resign if there's even a speculation, if it's a suggestion, a founded suggestion of wrongdoing or impropriety or awkwardness, right? Or conflict of interest, you're supposed to resign. And people are going to say, oh, this is Aaron. I mean, even Sylvanus Petty said it before the court. Said, but everybody in Bahamas is related, what's the big deal? Mm-hmm. Knowing that we're a small island developing state with tightly knitted family connections, you don't just ignore conflicts of interest. You create mechanisms to deal with them. Or at the very least, you enforce those that already exist, like the public disclosures process, right? You take seriously the process of making public declarations, you enforce it, and you gazette the results. Let us remind the Bahamian people that as a, an MP and a senior, even a senior civil servant, I'm not 1,000% certain on the senior civil servant, but you are required to disclose for 5 years post leaving office.
I want you to stick a pin there. 2023 is about to be completed.
Mm-hmm.
The whole year has gone by from January to December.
Mm-hmm.
I know, at least it hasn't been declared to us, to the public, no member of parliament and by extension the senior government official has declared. And I'm exaggerating here, right? Because I'm sure
you're not exaggerating, because guess what? We don't know that they've declared until it's been gazetted. You can't just get up to me and say, well, I'm the leader of the opposition. Just trust me. Just trust me. We receive. You certainly can't get up and say, well, I'm the chairman of the Public Disclosures Committee. Just trust me that we received them and we processed them. We just haven't gazetted them yet. They don't exist.
And to this day, the Prime Minister of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, and by extension, the leader of the opposition, have not made it a point of order to make sure that the Bahamian people are addressed and say, yes, see, here are the numbers.
I mean, if I were Pintard, if I were the leader of the opposition, I would purchase space in the newspaper and publish the declarations of my party members to force the issue, but not just to force the issue, to show the Bahamian people that we did what we ought to have done despite the government not doing what it ought to do.
And if they, by them not doing it, what does that mean?
Remember when Bremen called earlier in my show and said that we here speculating? I don't want to speculate on that one.
You don't want to speculate?
No.
But then, remember this whole show today, as we do our year-end review,
mm-hmm.
right, is about the culture of us.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm indicating that something, not that something is wrong with us, that we are broken.
Something is terribly wrong. See, you talk about the 2022 to the 2023 session, right? You talk about 2023 to 2024 session.
Yes.
We haven't even touched back to the 2022 to 2023 session.
Mm-hmm.
Were those gazetted and published?
And then it's a backlog, because the last one that was
gazetted
properly was what?
Here's what concerns me greatly. The PLP touted as a part of its 2021 campaign that they were preparing their candidates for governance. Like, you could not be selected as a candidate unless you had gone through a particular training program offered by the PLP to its candidates. Right? And the person, allegedly, according to Mr. Mitchell, or suggested by Mr. Mitchell, the person who designed the training module for PLP candidates did not remember that he had to declare his savings account and current account on his declaration form. But there's something. We are broken.
Surely these things are not a big deal, because the Bahamian people are not up in arms.
The Bahamian people, I will put it to you that the Bahamian people are in a place of crisis. The Bahamian people are so overwhelmed by crises after crises after crises that they don't have the space and time to protest in meaningful ways. Right? Some people have invested themselves, their families, and their economic standings in these political relationships. And even though they see wrongdoing happening, they feel like they're far too invested to take a stand and risk being marginalized or ostracized, that they don't say anything. They just watch with concern.
So I put a point to you. What next? Right? Just based on these two whites consider culture of us, right? That we have embraced and now seemingly have accepted as being a part of what, who we are. That we are a nation of charity. Right? We're used to that. We expect people to give us things. We're not working to move from point A to point B. And that our economy is far worse than
we. Let me tell you where we start.
Yeah.
Let me tell you where we start. Go on, sorry.
And that we are far worse off than what we than we think we are.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that by extension the Bahamian people are not complaining to say that we need to do better.
Yeah.
What do we do?
Okay, first thing we do is we make politicians acknowledge this point, that you cannot lambaste or lambast your constituents for having their handout when it's most likely that you arrived where you are or you sustain yourself where you are because of a culture of patronage. It is not the Bahamian person that created, the citizen that created the culture of patronage. It's the politician that created it and benefits from it continually. And then they want to complain. I mean, the audacity of Fred Mitchell to get up and say, oh, we all know that every MP's wallet is empty. Everyone in this house, their wallet is empty at the end of the month. The audacity. I see we got to call it though.
Yeah, but we know that they increased the budget because of the demand. I just want to mention that, but let's go to the caller there.
I want to know which wallet he's talking about.
Yeah. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me?
Sorry, caller. We miss you.
Yeah. The idea that recently they increased the budget of each member of parliament because of the great demand that is said to be asking of politicians, that the Bahamian people are, what I call, so desperate in need that a politician needs access to more money in order to do more things in their community. But the call is back now, so let's patch that call through. Go ahead, caller, can you hear me?
A pleasant good morning, Mr. Nuri and Mr. Green.
Morning.
Sparky.
How you all doing?
Doing well.
I had a nice weekend watching some football. Hello?
It's a wild week.
Yeah. Well, just jumping up and down with the Dallas Cowgirls getting that stomping last night.
Sunday.
Anyway. They don't believe there's girls, but I proved there's girls last night. But
girls
anyway.
Do everything better than men.
Except being men. I think men should also throw up their hands and say women run the world.
No, men could say they do everything better than women except being women. Be cool with that. Be cool with that.
See, I can prove women run the world because if a woman say they in the mood, everything stops. Men don't have a chance to get in the mood. We got to always be prepared like Boy Scouts.
But look here, that's a heavy pressure they put on y'all.
Yeah, when the woman say, I ain't in the mood, oh, you might as well forget even the conversation. But Miss Green, they say Sparky always complaining, but somebody just called me, just text me a little while ago. I mean, a high-ranking official in the government ministry. And he asked me, Sparky, when you see Mr. Brave again, pass this message on. I said, brother, I see them just like y'all to see them, traveling, partying, busy in the House Assembly. They just busy. I mean, I understand, Mr. Nuri, that they busy because we went through Dorian, we went through COVID, and then we went through the other hurricane which was walking on two legs. They ain't calling no name. And so many things seem to be going awry in this country. This person just tell me, when I see Mr. Davis again, please ask Mr. Davis and President Biden and King Charles to tell us what's going on with this renegade immigration problem. I said, I don't understand how to do that. And Miss Green, I can say this again, man. Every system around here, even the phone system, seem to be failing me. I mean, cable just, all their phones just dead now. Nothing is called, nothing going through. The systems around here seem to be failing. You can't call nobody, you can't get no answers. You can't see nobody. I called you the other day about the car licensing thing. They say they're spending millions of dollars to go renovate and run one place for the new road traffic department down on Tanique Darling Highway. They got money to rent a place to do that, but you don't have money to even bring in cars, license plates. I mean, in this little country, 21/7, the island ain't growing, the population growing, the system's failing. People, like you say, online trying to get a plate of cooked food, and me trying to move forward, and then people coming on the radio and the TV saying, we got over 100 different natural resources in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, but we're not benefiting from it. The elite families and the foreigners getting all our natural resources, making money off it, but the Bahamian people ain't getting nothing back. And we're not complaining. We're begging for better Bahamas.
Thank you,
Sparky. We're begging for something we said was going to be a change.
Thank you, Sparky.
And hello, before I go, Ms. Green?
Yes, sir.
Ms. Green, it ain't only about me and you and Mr. Nouri. It's about our children and our grandchildren. What are we going to leave behind for them? Right now, grown-up people out working with a job can't afford to buy a piece of property. I must not talk about build a home.
No, man, we got to try save up and see if we could move to Windsor Lakes, Sparky. Let's see if you could claim me as a dependent, right? Because I ain't got no children, and so I can need somebody to... Let's see if we could work that out, Mr. Nouri. Would you do an after David for us?
Rodney, it's Rodney Moncrief.
No, I don't want
him. You want him signing for you?
No. Let's say congratulations to my mother, Lila Green.
Okay, what's up with you today?
Who recently... she recently achieved... Well, she completed successfully the Justice of the Peace course.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So she can make money from that?
Yeah. But I can't go to her because she don't lie, so I can't. Sure. No. But Sparky, we can work on that.
Yes.
We'll be moving into Windsor Lakes.
But another thing I want to talk about before we go on a commercial break, is what we plan to do in the new year. Will it be the same old, like I say, the culture of us and what we are accepting, right? We've concluded that we have a housing crisis. We concluded that we have a migrant crisis. We concluded that
we have an administrative crisis,
right?
Yeah.
But we are seemingly content. Because when you consider the administrative crisis and all these things tie onto it, what I call prior, right? It seems as if this is just us now. This is the way we do things. It's not going to get any better than this, that come the new year, because our party is in power, we don't have the right to complain. And that we won't complain. So it could be business as usual moving forward.
That's something, eh? Remember we were talking about duty of care? And it appears as if some people think that their party has a duty of care to them as supporters. And that means that those supporters should get first choice of all bids, all jobs, all contracts, right? All projects, all programs. It appears as if political parties also think that their supporters have a duty of care to the party. Like you say, to don't critique, to ignore anything that looks funky, ignore anything that looks weird, ignore anything that people are demanding we question, right? And we have to disrupt that entirely. The best thing about it is, Mr. Nouri, that we have everything that we need in our hands. When we sit here and we raise concerns about migrants, particularly the Haitian migrants in the Bahamas, let's also acknowledge that there are many lessons that we can learn from our migrant brothers and sisters in our country. In fact, almost every lesson we need to learn, we could learn from them right now.
I'm going to beat you.
Mm-hmm.
Is it safe to say that the migrants would be with us moving forward? That we need to find a way to live with them in terms of what our social structure is?
I like the question. I don't like how you frame the question.
I got to frame it like this because I say I beat you.
This is normal all across the globe. The problem isn't that...
So this is not unique to the Bahamas?
No, the problem isn't that migrants are in the Bahamas. The problem is we have an administrative crisis where, A, migrant movement is not being properly documented throughout the country, and B, we refuse to expand and redesign our systems to benefit both the migrant and the Bahamian.
Are you saying that an undocumented migrant, an undocumented person, can move from Acklands and end up in Grand Bahama without anybody stopping them?
Well, I mean, that's a far stretch, right? And because of Acklands' proximity to Haiti, that may be a why, but certainly I know that a migrant could find himself in Nassau and go to Lutra and come back and go to Abaco and probably work with very little cause for concern.
So the conclusion is it's an administrative issue.
Yeah, it is an administrative issue.
A policing issue
let's take it beyond the Haitian migrant crises, right? How many non-Haitian tourists sail through our country every year? How many of those boats are being checked? How many of those boats are being scanned? Who can say with 1,000% certainty that they know exactly what is on every boat coming into this country? We had a group of migrants, wonderful European guests, quote unquote, stuck in the Bahamas during the pandemic, doing all the things that Bahamians were restricted from doing in pandemic time and outside of pandemic time. For them, they were just surviving. They were on their Robinson Crusoe journey, eating undersized crawfish and having a good time. We had no idea. No idea, but we don't see that this system will be beneficial for the whole Bahamas and not just for those who are tired of seeing Haitians. It's an administrative crisis. We can be implementing systems. The systems are not targeting Haitian migrants. They're targeting issues that are wider than just the Haitian migrant community and would benefit the country as a whole. If we remove, it's a cultural thing, we got to remove the bias in the policy creation.
But anyway, let's take a break right here, and then we'll come back and continue our analysis on our year-end review and continue on some subject. So we'll take a short break right now, and this is Garden Radio in AM with C.A. Nuri. We'll be right back.
Can you believe this? We are now the patrol queens of the neighborhood.
We now large and in charge. So we need to check out what's going on in everybody's yard. What about that gun that we know that Junior and his homeboys just ran out? Can we report that too?
Of course we can.
But we could be in deep trouble if they find out.
We need to report what we see, Beulah. When you call Crime Stoppers, they just answer your call in Miami.
So then we can report everything? Guns? Where they hiding the drugs? Who shoot who? Who part of which gang? Or who disturbing the peace with the loud music and the motorcycles?
Then our neighborhood will be the best in the Bahamas, and everybody gonna want to come live here. And then our house price will go up, gal.
So what we waiting on? What's the number?
If you see something, say something. Let us all pitch in and stop the crime before it's your time. Call 328-8477 from Nassau or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands. Or text us through the Crack Crime Bahamas app. Stop the crime before it's your time.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Are you ready to catapult your business into the spotlight? Introducing Guardian Business Boots.
Ignite your success, and it's absolutely free to join.
Did you say free?
Yes. Free Guardian Business Boost is not just a program. It's your ticket to unprecedented visibility and growth. The Guardian Media Group is committed to helping the Bahamas prosper by creating new opportunities for small businesses who are the key drivers of that growth.
How does it work?
It works by first registering your business with the Guardian Business Boost at thenassauguardian.com. Then, each month, Guardian Media will pick and boost 5 businesses with 1 month of free ads across our multiple advertising platforms. The Nassau Guardian newspaper, website, Guardian Radio 96.9, Star 106 Hits, and all social media platforms. Catapult your business into the spotlight with Guardian Business Boost. Sign up for free today at thenassauguardian.com.
hang on, mistletoe. I'm gonna get to know.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri. We're analyzing, doing analysis of our year-end review. We had two topics. The culture of us is basically the main topic, the trend.
Why you didn't let the boy lie to me a little longer with the song?
With the song?
When you tell me, I want to get to know you better. I know that's a lie, yeah. But it sounds so sweet, Mr. Newman.
Yeah. I didn't want us to talk off here. I realized the mic was open, so let me quickly start it, right? But I want to give commentary on something that the Minister of National Security said.
Mm-hmm.
And one was that a 7-year-old...
A seven-year-old
can give consent, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think this is something that it was big media...
Last year when he said it. Yeah, yeah.
And it still gives a tale about how we look at women, how we look at rape and sexual assault, and the culture of that. And again, we talk about the culture of us. I wanted the analysis on that.
Yeah.
But I know you had an article I want you to read for me, so let's start off with that.
All right. Well, this would be on the list under Kirk Cornish, the PM of Abaco, and the sharp rise in rape culture. Here is the headline for the story I'm reading from. Man, 40, sentenced to 5 years after admitting sex with girl, 14. A 40-year-old man was on Thursday sentenced to 5 years in prison after he admitted to having unlawful sexual intercourse with his 14-year-old, quote-unquote, girlfriend. Godfrey Gray, who has spent almost 3 years in custody, received the sentence as a part of a plea deal. The time Gray spent awaiting trial will be deducted from the 5-year sentence. I want to just stick a pin right back there so we could go back to that. Okay, Mr. Nuri? After completing his sentence, Gray will be placed on probation for 2 years. If he is convicted of new crimes during this period, he would be sent back to prison for 1 year. Gray pleaded guilty to 5 counts of unlawful sexual intercourse when he appeared before Justice Gregory Hilton. Had the case gone to trial, the prosecution would have led evidence to show that Gray met his victim at a funeral. He's a funeral director. He met his victim at a funeral. We're sticking a pin there, Mr. Nuri, where they exchanged numbers. Sometime in October 2020, Gray, then 37, began a sexual relationship with the girl, although he was aware of her age. The age of consent in heterosexual relationships is 16. Gray was arrested and charged with 3 counts of unlawful sexual intercourse with the minor in December 2020, and he was remanded to prison. A month later, he was freed on bail with the stipulation that he had no contact with his teen girlfriend. However, Gray breached his bail and resumed his illicit sexual relationship with the teen. That's a really complicated to say.
Continued raping him.
Police arrested him and the minor at a motel on East Street in March 2021. He was subsequently charged with 2 counts of unlawful sexual intercourse and remanded to prison. Mr. Nuri, time that he spent on remand is going to be deducted for his sentence. See, remember when I was telling you I don't like a debt for nature swap because it feels like you're going to use my nature that I have equal and equitable access to pay off your debt that the government created, right? And in the same way, it feels to me that you are giving him a lighter penalty because you, the judiciary, cannot bring suspects to court in a reasonable amount of time. Are we concerned about the income that he can't make because he can't go to work because he's in jail? No, we're not. He should have been concerned about that before he, as a funeral director, ignored his duty of care for the bereaved who are vulnerable in their time of loss and took advantage of a minor girl to develop a relationship with her. We don't care about how much time he may have lost while sitting in jail waiting on you, the judiciary, to get your files in order. We do not care. Let's get back to the other point. He is a funeral director.
Oh, he's a funeral director.
He has a duty of care. If we read from the another headline, man jailed.
He was just there at the funeral.
No, man jailed for illegal relationship with teen girl from the Bahamas Court News site. Bahamas Court News site, 16th of December. A 40-year-old funeral director has been jailed for 5 years for having an illegal sexual relationship with his teenage girlfriend. Stick a pin. See, we're looking at what, roughly between the age, this started between the age of like 11, 12, 13, right? Around that age. See, when somebody in a position of authority suggests that a seven-year-old can consent to sex, even though the law won't recognize it, I imagine that somebody who is unbalanced in the head could hear that and think, well, if a seven-year-old could consent to sex, then I could have a relationship with an 11-year-old, a 12-year-old, a 13-year-old. I'm not saying that Mr. Monroe knew what was in the mind of the ordinary man when he said it. But at some point, he should get up and completely and entirely denounce the statement.
I'm still concerned about the outcry or the lack thereof. And this is what I brought it up for, right? The culture of us. Culturally, we seem to accept this behavior because there isn't any large outcry. This is a part of who we are, part of our tapestry.
In fact, there is a large outcry. I want to argue against that. There has been a large outcry from state actors suggesting that the law has changed because these young girls are so brazen now. And they're taking advantage. They're taking advantage of these big, grown, but simple men. What you're going to do is you're going to sue the Ministry of Education for releasing so many big, grown, simple men on the road who don't know that you can't have sex with a 7-year-old, an 8-year-old, a 9-year-old, a 10-year-old, an 11-year-old. I'm not talking about a 17-year-old boy or an 18-year-old boy that buck a girl constantly in his community who is a bit overdeveloped for her age. And yeah, she's 12, but she looked like 15. We're not talking about that. This boy was 39.
And a professional, funeral director.
Remember the other case with the girl they caught on video entering the gentleman's home in her school uniform?
Yeah.
They pointed out, though, that they had a relationship. How in God's name is any big grown man walking around here saying out loud, I have an actual wholesome relationship with a minor girl? And who? See, I don't believe in vigilante justice, right? But why aren't y'all just picking up these men and taking them directly to the police station?
Aaron, I'll put it to you that there are communities, particularly on the family island, that this is the norm. This is the norm that young girls is preyed upon by older men, if not just older men, family members.
Listen, I know what the mantra is. If there's, what they say, if there's grass on the field,
you could play ball.
You could play ball. Sickening as whoever those PLP supporters are that put out that video saying Shane and Robin pulling train on the PLP. It is sickening. And it doesn't, see, we'd like to believe it begins from the bottom and rises up. It starts from the top and comes down. We have to take a stand. Our young women and our young men are being left prey to predators. You see, talk about the family island. Let's think about the allocation of resources. Here's a little bit of anecdote for you. Somebody I know on the family island said last week that currently, they are understaffed at one of these family island police stations. If you need the police, when you go there, oftentimes you find a station lock up. Mm-hmm. If you really need them, you have to go to town to find them. And they get a notice on the door say, please report all incidents to headquarters in New Providence so that they are documented. Is happening on the family islands. And what are young girls and boys who are vulnerable to sexual violence, sexual harassment, sexual coercion? And this is what I mean. Every day, big grown men begging you to have sex with them every day, all the time, waiting to corner you in private. What are young women and boys supposed to, young girls and boys, young women and men supposed to do? What are they supposed to do?
And again, I put forward to you the culture of us.
It has to be the culture of us, because we had an MP who refused to go in for questioning on a charge of sexual violence, and a prime minister who refused to fire him from the party, kick him out of the party. Yes, you fired him, the officer of the OPM. Kick him out the party. Tell him he could be an MP in somebody else's party, but not in yours. What type of example are we setting when we know that one in every three women have experienced sexual violence, from harassment to rape, in their lifetime? It just is unbelievable.
But surely sexual harassment is part of our culture too. We are a culturally explicit nation.
No, it's weirder than that. See, like if you told me, hey, Jamaica, through their dance, their music, is a sexually explicit. They have elements of their culture that are sexually explicit, right? We don't dance all the way they dance all. Right? You could see the evolution of dance all and the explicit nature of the dances, some of the dances and some of the activity happening there. We're not quite there yet. We got something even more pernicious going on, because that's in the open. That's kind of in the open. We have this weird thing here where we all pretend to be saints and decent, the most pious, decent people in the world.
Where a pastor can say that he didn't rape her, but I just have sex in the church.
Right.
But
I didn't rape the minor girl,
yeah,
who described the inside of my bedroom and the altar. I just have sex with my wife on the pulpit because that's what you do.
And then they do an analysis of the pulpit and see a whole with a black light name.
The neon light? Yeah, the black light, yeah.
And see semen all over the place.
Listen, I mean, we didn't even use the word Nigod. It took us this long in the conversation to even utter the word Nigod.
Because he was defended and protected by a political system and political party who said, no, he's a sponsor.
Listen, we read the story earlier this fall about the man that chased the girl. Remember the young lady where they were at the Pardeski at the Conch Salad place? And she alleges that she told her friends, don't let me be the last one. Mm-hmm. This boy chased her from KFC to Wendy's, threatened death, kidnapped her 2-3 times, had the audacity to tell the judge. But I mean, like, you're on everything cool because it's like my girlfriend, eh?
Mm-hmm.
And this gentleman still got up in court and say this young child is his girlfriend?
The culture of us.
It just...
We need some introspection.
Absolutely. Without a doubt. And we need to examine where this culture of patronage has taken us. It's not anywhere nice. And we owe Bahamian people the service of eradicating it.
Come in 2024, it'll be the same thing.
It'll be the same thing if we don't demand that it changes. It'll be the same thing if we, for our own comfort, allow these stories to slip out of our memories, to slip out of our minds. We have to determine what is most important to us, and we need to fight for it. And if protecting the children and creating an environment where they could grow up as safely as possible is not what's most important to us, then man, go walk in the ocean. I don't even have children. Go walk in the ocean. Mm. That's it. The government's job. Preserve the past. Provide for the present. Prepare for the future. That includes people and their lives. And I don't understand a government that says governing would be easy if we didn't have to worry about all of these citizens, all these people always messing up our plans for governance. Start right there and ask, here's the question to ask. What's the system that we practice called? What's the political system that we practice called? Ask them that.
And see if they understand it.
See if they know how to say it.
Yes, or even know the definition. Next week, we may have to have a show on what all members of parliament is giving out plate of food this Christmas to their Christmas party. Say, come this way. We have ham and turkey in a takeout container for all of you. And then see who all giving out ham and turkey out of the $100,000 they need to start, they're supposed to start initiatives with.
Yeah, because that ain't what the $100,000 is for.
That ain't what it's supposed to be for.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah, we can have a discussion on that. Anyway, this is Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri. Thank you very much, Aaron Green. Aaron, you have an appointment for tomorrow, right? That would be taking half your show?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. I have some guests coming in also. So yeah. It should be good.
I got to go talk to CARICOM. I found out Jamaica have mangoes right now.
Jamaica have mangoes?
And we ain't got none.
We have Dilly, though.
I mean, yeah, we got Dilly. But
Dilly and Fox.
I'll trade some. Mango for Dilly.
Yeah. Anyway, this has been Guardian Radio in the AM with C.A. Nuri. Have a wonderful day.
Be caroling all through the night, and this Christmas will be a very special Christmas for me. Yeah, 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 yeah. Presents and cards are here. My world is filled with cheer and laughter this Christmas. And as I look around, your eyes, they outshine the town. This Christmas, fireside is blazing bright, and we'll be caroling all through the night. And this Christmas will be a very special Christmas for me, a very special Christmas, a very special Christmas for me.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.